Women make up half of the restaurant workforce nationwide, but they're underrepresented in executive chef and ownership positions. Women-owned businesses are the fastest growing segments of entrepreneurship in America. Yet female founders, you, my wife's a small business owner as well too, they continue to receive a disproportionately small share of business investment capital. That was shocking to me. So I'm curious, why do you think, especially in the restaurant industry, in the food service industry, why are women so underrepresented?
That's a big question.
Hey guys, welcome back. Brand new episode of Y'allitics. We've done a lot of episodes at restaurants, at brew pubs, at breweries. This is our very first one in a bakery, and guess who did not show up for it? Wheeler. He's not here for it. So you have me for this episode here. We're at Kuluntu Bakery, and Kuluntu, I believe I pronounced that right, Bakery in Oak Cliff here. It's just behind the Dallas Zoo, and we are with the founder of the bakery, Stephanie Likely Chalkland. Thanks for having us over here.
Thank you.
And normally we have a pint of beer, a Texas beer, but you have something completely different that we've never done before. What do you have here for us?
We have rooibos tea. This is a tea from South Africa. Okay. It means red bush, and it grows indigenous in the Cedarburg Mountains there. It's an herbal tea, and it's a really important kind of cultural beverage to have.
And so it's rooibos, R-O-O-I?
R-O-O-I-B-O-S.
Let's pour some and try some of this here. So thanks for pouring. You asked if I wanted milk or anything in it. You guys sometimes serve it with milk or
different
things? Yeah,
you can have it just straight up. Or you could have it with milk and sugar or honey.
If Wheeler was here, he'd have something sweet in it, but I like it straight up. So that's just...
It's really delightful. We also like to use this ingredient in some of our baking as well.
Excellent.
There you go. Cheers.
Cheers. It turned around here.
There we go.
Cheers. It's delightful tea.
It
means red bush.
Yes.
You know, the reason we're at a bakery today, the reason this called, it caught our attention for several reasons. Stephanie got a James Beard nomination in 2023 for the bakery. Congrats on that.
Thank you.
That is huge. As a foodie, I'm really interested in that. But you're also shining a light on something that I didn't think about. And when a friend of mine recommended this episode to me, the first thing he said, which immediately caught my attention, was you're shining a light on women in the food industry and trying to give them more opportunities. And let's start with a couple of stats here. Women make up half of the restaurant workforce nationwide, but they're underrepresented in executive chef and ownership positions. Women-owned businesses are the fastest growing segments of entrepreneurship in America. Yet female founders, you, my wife's a small business owner as well too, they continue to receive a disproportionately small share of business investment capital. That was shocking to me. So I'm curious, why do you think, especially in the restaurant industry, in the food service industry, why are women so underrepresented?
That's a big question. You know, there's so many structural things that are at play with this. The food industry, it is an industry that is really challenging. I know that that's spoken about more widely now, and people have more knowledge about, like, super difficult margins to make, all these things. And so because of that, there hasn't been really an investment in the workforce. And
But low margins wouldn't really impact whether it's a man or a woman, you know, trying to make a go at it, would it?
Yes, but if you look at, I mean, right. But if you look at, I mean, across the board, sure, the wage gap is right. A thing, right? It's a very much a real thing that happens. And it's also an underinvestment in things that are really important, like benefits. I mean, most people do not earn benefits. That has more of an impact on women than it does on men, because women actually reinvest much more of their earnings into their families and their communities at a rate of 90% of their earnings, as opposed to men who reinvest 35%. So when we're talking about these things, it's like you have to zoom out to look at, like, where the investment's happening, where it's not happening, and also the lack of, really got me going here, but like support for, as an example, working mothers. This is not an industry that is friendly to women. So women will leave the industry. I mean, that is so, so common.
How do you turn that around then? Because to my knowledge, I'm not in it like you are, but to my knowledge, these margins and the industry hasn't changed a lot in the past few decades.
Yeah. I mean, truthfully, it's much bigger than any one business can do. But there's things that we're really attempting to do in this space.
Tell us about that.
One of the things that we're doing is, we're paying for healthcare for our workers.
And that's uncommon, you said.
Yes, it's very uncommon. And we are also providing stipends in the form of childcare stipends to people who have families to help, you know, support that for them to be able to work. And we also have a wellness and transportation stipend as well to just help cover some of those costs that are important, because also this industry is incredibly difficult on your body. And that's something we've had so many conversations with people about, the burnout in the industry as well. And that's across the board, you know, both genders.
Sure.
But it is really important to be investing in the holistic being. And if we're really thinking about how we want to transform communities, really the place to invest is women because of the rate of reinvestment.
And you just had your grand opening in June.
Mm-hmm.
Congrats on that.
Thank you.
This is your first brick and mortar location, even though you started this in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
When you came back from South Africa. But I'm curious, it would seem a struggle enough or a challenge enough to just launch a brick and mortar location and experience these things as a woman business owner in the food industry to start with. But you're also taking on the issues. Why in the world would you want to adopt those issues and start all this at once?
Yeah, I mean, I just believe in it so much. You know, when you have something that you have so much conviction in and really believe in, I think you make it happen. And I've also, like, I've experienced many things. I've worked in the industry since I was in high school.
Hmm.
And, you know, I haven't even experienced the worst of what many people have experienced. But it's a really challenging thing to be a part of. We love, like, this industry is incredible. It gives so much to us. And it's a place where we can serve people and create, which is so important for people. But it's also not an industry that gives back to you in a lot of ways. And so, yeah, it just became really important to me to, like, really hone in on this piece of the puzzle through this space.
And give me an idea. You said you've worked off and on in the food industry since high school. A lot of folks have worked a little bit maybe in the food industry when they were younger. But give me some idea of your experiences. What did you experience
Yeah.
One or two experiences that made you think, listen, if I ever get to a situation where I'm in charge, we're not doing this, we're not doing this, and we're not doing this. What'd you experience?
Gosh. Well, sexual harassment, I mean, it's so common. Between 70 to 90% of women report sexual harassment on the job.
In
the food industry. So, yeah, that is very common. And so definitely that, you know, also something that's really important that is maybe becoming more of the forefront for people is, like, in a lot of restaurants that are run by men, not all, I'm not saying that, but like there's a lot of, like, really strong masculinity and aggression. So that is something I experienced, is yelling in the kitchen, like cursing, like yelling at people. And yeah, making people feel really uncomfortable, really terrible. That's very common to experience. And that's across the board. That's not just my experience. We've talked to many people in the industry as part of our work to develop our programming, many women, and like that's the experience.
And before we started recording here, you showed me around a little bit. One thing you pointed out I wanted to discuss here is there's a window from the dining room to the kitchen here, and that was deliberate.
Yes. And I can speak to that from my experience too, most kitchens are closed off, and that makes it unsafe for women because you can't see people coming, you can't see people going, and so that's a safety issue. Any sort of like, you know, nooks and crannies in that way. And so for me, that was really important, especially because bakers have challenging hours where the rest of the world's sleeping.
You're up early.
Yeah, and we have made it so that we're not up at crazy hours, but we still come in at, 6 o'clock. The sun's just coming up. It's dark outside, and we need to be able to see in and out. And I've experienced that in other bakery jobs where I had a lot of fear being there alone because I couldn't see the entrances. It was scary to be there alone. So it's also about like creating a space that's safe for people, making sure that there's multiple people here working at a time.
And our listeners or viewers can't see it also, but behind the camera here, it's just the wall against the street, against Clarendon, mm-hmm. is an entire wall of windows. So that really exposes it mm-hmm. as well. You mentioned the handful of things that you experienced, but as a woman entrepreneur, what are things that you've gone through as an entrepreneur who's a woman that men may not have to think about?
Well, funding is always a challenge. Getting access to capital.
But do men really have a better shot at that than women?
Yeah, for sure. And the stats tell that. Yeah, that story. I mean, men have much greater access to capital than women founders. So the beauty of this being a nonprofit is that we have had so many people who have connected with our mission and invested in us. But it has still been challenging to get it up and running from a funding perspective. And I think, people don't like to talk about this stuff. This is not a topic that, especially from a nonprofit perspective, that people can easily be like, oh, yeah, I get that. It really requires storytelling, and it requires listening and experience, and right. I think that is a challenge in the world we live in.
Do women have to lead differently?
Oh, yes.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, I think it is important that they do. I think it's important that we like rethink leadership. The idea of leadership has been more of a masculine, sort of dominating
right.
type of leadership. And so that's also something, like back to your question before, how my experiences have shaped the leadership, is like really trying to come at this with a lot more empathy, a lot more egalitarianism. We really try to create an organization that's non-hierarchical mm-hmm. as much as we can, which is also not typical in the industry, which is structured very hierarchically.
Yeah, that's good.
So rethinking how we do that, and lots of dialogue, lots of conversation, lots of checking in.
But people listening to this might say, well, at the end of the day, I mean, that sounds really good, but there has to be somebody in charge
yes.
to make sure the lights stay on and the business remains open, right?
Yeah, and that still happens. It's just that basically how we operate is a lot more bottom up than top down. Of course, I am the one leading the charge and making things happen, but I mean, you can see maybe you can't, but our team is, they're running this, really, and they have taken such a beautiful leadership role in all of this. And that's also an important transition I've learned in this process to make is when do you make that trade-off? Especially as the operator, I was doing it all before. So when do you make that trade-off, and how do you make that trade-off that makes people feel a lot of ownership in the process and partners in this is really challenging and takes a lot of time and a lot of thought. But I do believe that's the way that we can create both a sustainable organization, but then one that people feel really empowered to make decisions in.
I never have worked in a kitchen, but I remember reading Kitchen Confidential, Anthony Bourdain's book, which is a fantastic book. I was a big fan of his show. But one of the things that stuck with me is that it is hierarchical in kitchens, according to Bourdain and you too. And he mentioned that it was almost like a militaristic approach.
Yeah.
Head chef's a general. Everyone else, flanks down from there. Mm-hmm. I didn't think about that. But if you do have someone like that in charge and it's not a woman, then it may be tougher for women to survive in that type of an environment.
Right. Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's not a pleasant environment to be in, for one, especially when the leader doesn't understand all of the different situations, all the different inequities, and like even just these safety things, right? About like the windows and having access. I don't think a lot of men are thinking about that. I really don't. So it does take women to be in leadership roles to start seeing these small things that we all experience. Truly, I mean, get a woman talking and she will tell you her experiences. But it takes that to be like, no, we can do something different. You know, we have to be able to reimagine a different world. And that's something that we really try to embody in this space too, is this idea of reimagination. There's so much more that like our society can be. And so we really are trying to share that in this space as well, is like, if we just can step outside of what we know and think about our experiences and think of others' experiences,
Sure. Then
maybe we can think about a different, better way to do things.
Well, let's talk about this space here. Did I pronounce it correctly, Kluuntu?
Yes, that's right.
It's not that common of a word. Tell us what it means.
Yeah.
And why you decided to start a brick and mortar after having the business since 2018.
Yeah, and this is like such a good segue too, because Kluuntu means community in Xhosa, which is a South African language.
And you lived there for a while, and your husband's from there, right?
Yes, my husband is from Johannesburg, and so that's really where a lot of the inspiration comes from. And we say we're South African inspired. You know, we'll make different recipes and use different ingredients. But it's also in the philosophy of the space. And so I always like to talk about Ubuntu, which is an African philosophy. It means I am because you are. And it really speaks to our interconnectedness and shared humanity. So as I talked about this like process of reimagination and thinking about people's experiences, a lot of that work we do is centered around this philosophy of Ubuntu. And really recognizing people's shared experiences.
So not just men's, women's also then, right?
Yeah, yes.
And other cultures too, I presume?
Yes,
And that's where this tea is from?
Yes.
Rooibos?
Yes.
Are any of these inspired?
Not these ones.
Not these ones? They look fantastic.
No, but
though.
Wheeler's
not getting any of these.
Yeah, we do typically have, when we're open, we have a selection of different things. We have our Mealy Pop and Rooibos cake. Mealy Pop's a white cornmeal that is a staple part of many South Africans' diet. We have Malva pudding on the weekends, which is a really traditional South African dessert. And actually this coming weekend, we'll be celebrating Mandela Day at the bakery. So we'll have a lot of South African flavors as well.
So it seems like the bakery isn't just a bakery, obviously, and we've talked about it a little bit, but it really has a mission. How would you define what the mission is? I mean, there's a sign on the back that says what the mission is, but how would you explain to someone what the mission of this bakery is? Most bakeries don't have missions, I presume.
Yeah. At its core, it is about baking and breaking bread. So that's something that we use. Just take that with me, okay? So like that's at a super high level. But really like delving into the breaking bread concept and this kind of shared humanity piece, I think the bakery is really about, it's really about community and creating a more equitable, interconnected food system by centering women And then, of course, a lot of our work is around humanization of food workers as well. So,
and you can do all that from a bakery, though? I mean, but you can do all that from a bakery, though, Stephanie?
Well, you know, I'm pretty idealistic, so I like to think so. You know, something that is really exciting about this space is the creativity around it and this idea of creation. So that's something like, as somebody, like I sometimes think of myself as an artist, right? Culinary artist. And so this idea of creation is really at the heart of it. Like, we create with our hands, and people get to enjoy that. So that is that we can do more creating in this space and than just food, basically. So like, when people come into the space, we really want them to have an experience. We want them to, of course, like, they'll see the pastries and they'll be like, oh, ooh, yummy. But there's so much more to the space. Like, if you, I know cameras aren't moving, but over here, this right here that says Salbona, this is the essence of really who we are. My husband wrote this. And Salbona is a greeting in Zulu. It means I see you. So when people walk in, we want them to know that we see them, and we want them like to see them at their core, really, you know, their essence and their being. And so that's the intention of the space. So you see that right when you walk in, and then, you know, you get your food and your drinks and all that, and then you come into the space and you can see we have families here in the kids area. Kids are not central to our society here, as much as people might like to think that. They're not. So when we talk about like women-centered spaces, this is not a child-friendly society. You know, they have their space, we have our space. They're not thought about and designed. So that was something that was also really important to us, was to center children. So we put them smack dab in the middle of our bakery. That was a choice.
to make it a women's centered space.
Yes, because women do the majority of the caretaking, right? And so...
And the stereotype is, I mentioned this podcast episode before I left the newsroom, stereotype is, you know, women have cooked at home for generations. Women may be the best cooks. They are in my family. They're not, the men aren't. Daryl, our producer, is a fantastic cook. He's never had me over for barbecue. But the stereotype is that women have these roles, but they just don't have them professionally. Is that the case?
I think that's a bit antiquated.
Is it?
I mean, I think women are in the workforce at higher rates than they've ever been.
But they're not in these top roles, though.
But they're not in the top roles. They're not in the leadership roles. And a lot of that does have to do because our country doesn't support women and children in their policy. So, like, so much of this stuff, like I started out saying, is structural. You know, it's not like this man versus women thing. It's structural, it's baked into the cake. And unfortunately, like, we just have to do something about it because people aren't doing, the people who are creating policies are not doing anything. So, yeah, it is harder for women to advance in their careers because the way it's set up.
And Stephanie, if these problems are structural, how does a bakery in Dallas, Texas try to topple them?
I mean, mostly like through an example, for one, you know, showing that we can reimagine things, we can support people in a different way that is actually like based on their needs.
Yeah.
So that's one thing, just serving as an example of doing something different. And then we do have programming in the space too. So we have two programs that we'll be doing here right now. One is our Women's Care Collective, and that will be a monthly gathering for women food workers. And that will be focused on different themes around wellness. So like financial wellness, social, mental, physical, emotional, lots of dimensions. So we'll be bringing in different facilitators to host these sessions. And then our other program that we have is our Community of Change Makers, and that will be focused on community education around the food system and different social justice issues. And the idea about that is like really activating people to be more active participants in the food system, and just in like their daily lives.
What kind of reaction have you had since opening?
Very positive.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's been great. We had built such a beautiful customer base and community over the years, and I think there's just been so much excitement from them to see us like in the space that we've been talking about for a long time and working towards. So yeah, it's been really incredible and exciting.
Have you had reaction though from, you know, you're not just doing pastries very, very well. Mm-hmm. You're also, you know, you also have this mission. Have people reacted to that?
Yeah. And like positively. So we even have at the front when you check out, something that's we're doing differently is we're not taking tips. We're doing a service charge of 10%. And so we have a sign right by the register that explains why we're doing that. It's to support equitable wages and benefits. And typically when people see that, they are like, oh, wow, this is so great. Like, I'm so happy that y'all are doing this. Or like, I didn't know this. Yeah. So there's a genuine curiosity, kind of like yourself, of like, I didn't realize this is happening. And yeah, it's been a very positive reception.
You grew up in Dallas. You spent years working in nonprofits here, moved to New York. Is that right?
Kind of. So
somewhere
grew up here, went to school at A&M, and then I lived up in New York, was working in different bakeries and in nonprofits up in New York.
And then went to South Africa. Now you're back here. You're full circle now.
Yes, full circle.
Looking back, was there one moment when you realized that food / public policy might become your life's work?
Yeah. Well, maybe not a moment exactly, but it was when I was in graduate school.
What happened?
I studied at the Bush School, and I was studying nonprofit management. And I took a class called Women in Nations by a really incredible professor. And it was really illuminating because as a woman, we have so many experiences that we might not be able to like quite articulate. You know, it's like feeling, right? Of like, oh, you know, that didn't make me feel safe. I don't know why, like those sorts of things, right? And some that are more obvious, but that was very illuminating because it finally like gave me the language to understand these structural issues, that this is so much bigger, and also that this piece about like what is possible if we just invest in this like really strategic way, really, that it can create so much more prosperity, so much more peace in the world. And this is like, this is actual fact. This is being studied and proven that is a fact. So that really got me focused on women. And also at the same time, I had like recently studied abroad in Argentina, and I was just like really into food. And I started then going into baking as a stress relieving hobby, because grad school is very stressful. And I just kind of found a way to marry the two. So that was back, really, I had this idea of a concept back in 2015.
Oh, okay, before you opened it in 2018 then?
Yes, yeah.
Wow.
So had this idea, and then the South African component of it, and really this community building aspect came into my life more through my husband, really.
If there's one thing that lawmakers could do, or that regulators can do, now there's regulations for businesses that would impact this, but if there's one thing that the state could do or the nation could do, what would you want it to be?
That is a big question.
Is it?
Yeah. Oh, that's a huge question. I mean,
the legislature goes back down to Austin in January. They're always looking for ideas.
I mean, I think paid family leave is huge. We're the only developed nation that does not have that. So,
and it's improved a lot in the last decade, but
But a lot of it's because of individual
some
states
corporations have done
or
it,
businesses.
Yeah, sure.
So
not across the board.
Yeah. So, I mean, in the food industry, that it's not existent at all.
It doesn't exist?
No. I mean, I there's one place that I know of down in Austin that does have a paid maternity leave.
Wow.
But yeah, no, it's not a thing.
So a woman would have to leave then, leave her job.
Yes. And that's what happens. That's what happens. Women will leave. You know, I had a child in the midst of all this. He's almost 2 years old. And I certainly would not have been able to keep my job. Nor do I think if I didn't have this, you know, doing this for myself, I think it would have been really hard to get back into because of the hours, because of the grueling nature of the work. And then those things compounded with not a lot of pay and not benefits. You know, when we started interviewing people to learn more about experiences, that was where we started with our programming. We spoke to women food workers and had conversations. And the only prompting we did was, tell me about your experience. And I heard a lot. And
what'd you hear?
A lot about the not feeling safe in the kitchens, lots of sexual harassment. Pretty much everybody had that to share. No place to pump, which is why we have created a family room here, having to pump in a utility closet. Mm. Those were some of the big ones. So out of those people that I interviewed, I think one of them is still in the industry. And these are people who had businesses, they've been in the industry for a long time. People leave the industry because they have families and it's no longer supportive to them, especially women.
Wow. A couple last questions here. Walk me through what all you guys, the employees, I say you guys, I say, come on, Whiteley. What do you guys make here that I should come over and try when I'm not doing an episode?
Yeah.
Because the spread in front of us looks fantastic.
Yeah. Well, you know, I always love to talk about our sourdough bread because
up front here,
that's this right here. This is our country sour. And the reason that's so special, well, one, my sourdough starter, I started right when I moved to New York in 2015. Its name is Flubby. And Flubby came to South Africa, back. So Flubby's been around the world. So that's just a fun thing. But at its heart, I think bread is just one of those things that is such a, like a equalizing
crosses cultures
thing. Yeah, it's at the heart of so many cultures, you know, sitting down to break bread, it's such a communal act. So this is so symbolic for me. It's delicious, it's good for you, but it's also really symbolic. Mm. So that's really special to me.
It looks great.
Thank you. And then, actually our cinnamon roll is really to die for.
Right here.
And a lot of people come in for that. We use croissant dough scraps to make the cinnamon rolls. So that's also something that's important to us is sustainability and, you know, not wasting food, which is also a big issue. And so we repurpose as much as we can. And that's one of the ways in which we do it.
So it's a lighter cinnamon roll, I guess. Is it?
You know, it's not too heavy. And it has kind of a delicateness to it. Mm. We do a brown butter cream cheese, so it's not too sweet. And I think with everything that you have, we have really balanced flavors. That's a lot of the feedback we get, is that it's not too sweet. Mm. We're always doing different specials, especially
with
the seasons.
This one looks great, though, with the pistachio on it.
You know what? This one is a really cool one to talk about, too, because there's a story with this.
Yeah.
So this is our war fig Danish.
War fig
Danish. So it's pistachios and figs. The figs are grown by my neighbor. She is an artist, an activist. Her name's Cynthia Mulcahy. Mm-hmm. And Her work centers around war, actually.
Wow.
Yeah, so these figs are from a cutting from a tree in Syria, 350-year-old mother fig tree that was barrel bombed, and somebody went and took cuttings to preserve the genetic diversity of, you know, the plant life. And so she got one of these cuttings and she got it to root, and she has a beautiful tree in her backyard. And
in
she
Dallas.
Yes, in wow. the neighborhood, in our
wow.
neighborhood.
Wow.
Yeah. And these figs are, they're amazing. They're huge. They're like quarter pounds. You weighed them.
Oh my God.
And they taste like the quintessential fig, like honey. And it's beautiful. And so it's part of her work. So she calls them war figs.
That looks fantastic.
Yeah.
And for people who come and buy this is a nonprofit bakery. Where does the money go?
The money goes to supporting our programming. So we, you know, keep all the operations as the operations, and then any sort of funding we get from fundraising and the profits and all that, it supports our programming.
Last question. 10 years from now, how much of an impact do you hope to have on women in the food industry? Looking down the road a little bit.
That's a big question, too. You got a lot of heavy hitters here.
Off the top of my head here, Stephanie, off the top of my head.
You know, I think what I would...
It's a big undertaking what you're doing. I mean, from the business side and the mission side, too. But where do you hope it is? Not ends, but what do you hope it leads to a decade down the road?
You know, I really hope that it leads to more systemic change. I think that we start small and we just do what we can to build and think about things more strategically at a system level. And so what we hope to implement later down the line is more work around food businesses and with leaders to start implementing different, like, more equitable policies and provide alternatives to doing that. Alternatives as in, like, how we can make that happen, right? Alternative to what the status quo is. So that would be, like, kind of the trickle down is, like, not directly us, but by proxy and, you know, by working with different organizations, you know, that it has that trickle down effect.
Being that example, I guess.
Yeah, being the example. And then also just like not directly answering that question, but what I would also really like the impact to be is more like around the community and really thinking about like how we relate to each other as a community, what our impact is as a community member, and how we can support each other more and really listen to each other. So really trying to, it's a really divided world, and like trying to provide a space that also brings people together and then helps them, not helps them, but maybe inspires or encourages people to then take that forward into their own spaces.
Big undertaking.
Yes.
Yeah. Congrats on the bakery and the mission as well. Can't wait to see how this goes. And for shining a light on something I don't think a lot of people think about. People go to these, you know, restaurants, they love the food, they love the menu, they love the, you know, maybe the wine list or something like that. But I don't think a lot of people realize what happens, you know, outside of the dining room.
Yeah.
And the fact that you've experienced that and a lot of your employees have and so many other people have, I think, might be kind of eye-opening for maybe some of our listeners, some of our watchers as well.
I hope so.
Thanks so much, Stephanie Likely-Chalkland from Kulumpu Bakery.
Thank you.
On Clarendon, right behind the Dallas Zoo. Appreciate it. Good luck.
Thank you. I appreciate it.